When people ask me which of my some 10,000 interviews I enjoyed the most, there's always one that comes to mind. That day in the fall of 1986, when I had the chance to meet and talk with a personal hero, the actor and producer, John Houseman. Now, over five decades of theater, radio, television, and movies, John Houseman built his reputation the old-fashioned way. He earned it. In the acting role that, for many, defined him, John Houseman played the wizened and crusty Professor Charles W. Kingsfield in the 1973 movie The Paper Chase. He won an Oscar that year for Best Supporting Actor. Then he returned to the role for the TV series in 1978.
You come in here with a skull full of mush, and if you survive, you leave thinking like a lawyer.
Where would your career have gone had it not been for The Paper Chase?
Well, it's a very hard thing to guess. Who knows? But the fact is that at the time that the paper, when I was 70 years old, at the time that The Paper Chase came up, I was running the drama division of the Juilliard School, and I was an elder statesman, and it is quite conceivable that in due course I would have exhausted that and retired and led a very modest life. It's almost impossible to conceive what that would have been, because something else might have come up. But this came up, and it certainly changed the entire course of my life.
You could have not probably foreseen at the time you took the role how great it would flower.
Oh, heavens no. No, I did it really because a friend asked me to, and I thought it would be amusing and exciting and fun to do. And even after it was made, I came back. It only took 2 weeks to make, and I came back to my position as head of the school and thought nothing of it. Then when the picture was shown that summer, some months later, I reacted to the fact that I got very nice personal reviews. And then, little by little, this sort of expanded, and we got the Academy Award. And then, in fact, nothing really happened for 5 years more after that, because the change in my life took place as a result of the television show, not the movie. The movie was fine. It was over, finished, and put in the can. But the television show changed my life entirely.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and I may be because my memory is a little fuzzy. Had you written in TV Guide sometime back that you had been recommended to someone for the role because they thought you were so much like Kingsfield when you were working?
No, that's not the way it worked. I got the job entirely through the personal friendship of a young man who had worked for me called James Bridges, who was the writer-director of that picture. There were jokes about it. I ran it for my students at Juilliard. I invited them to come and see a preview of the picture, and they sat very nicely and laughed and applauded and went home, but said nothing to me. And I'd been critiquing them for years, so I was I was anxious to know what they would think. And the next day, again, they said nothing. And so the third day I got mad, and I finally got them all together in some place where I knew they'd be assembled. And I said, now, come on, I invite you to see the picture. What do you feel about it? And they said, well, Timothy Bottoms is real good, and Lindsay Wagner was very attractive, yeah? And I said, I'm not asking you about that. I'm asking you about me, my performance. And they said, performance? There was no performance. You've been behaving exactly that way around here for years. And that was actually a lie, but it amused them, and I've always thought it was a funny story.
Does it bother you or frustrate you at all that people generally of my age and younger know you only as Professor Kingsfield?
No, it's very natural, and as it should be. Well, no, if what you're saying now is not entirely true. I wish it were. But in fact, more than half the people who stop me in the street or on planes or in theaters or play, are talking about the commercial, about the Smith-Barney commercial.
Smith Barney. They make money the old-fashioned way. They earn it.
That, at the moment, has made a deeper impact than even than Kingsfield and the Paper Chase.
What an impact that has had on Smith Barney.
It certainly has.
Just incredible. I'm curious, as an extension of that, I'm wondering, as you watch television, what celebrities who are endorsing products influence you? Are you influenced when Bill Cosby tells you to buy Coca-Cola? Are you influenced by George C. Scott, whoever it may be?
No, I personally am not. On the other hand, a lot of this is subliminal. I mean, it may very well be that some of the stuff I buy just normally day after day, that even buying a cereal, I may well be influenced, without even realizing it, by a commercial that I've seen that tells me that it has more of this or less of that or something. One doesn't know. The exact chain between the commercial and the buying is very hard to determine. Now, of course, with Smith Barney, it's different because I'm not selling a specific product. I'm selling
an image,
a firm, and a name of a institution.
Forgive
and that's
me.
Why I like it. I don't really enjoy selling products particularly.
I believe you said on Larry King last night that you don't actually come right out and endorse a product.
I never come out and say, I urge you to buy this, or I believe this. I try and avoid the first person singular in my commercials, if I can.
But long, long before he became a TV pitchman, John Houseman worked with the legendary Orson Welles, most famously collaborating with him on the 1938 radio drama that traumatized America, The War of the Worlds.
Six state troopers lie dead in a field east of the village of Grover's Mill, their bodies burned and distorted beyond all possible recognition.
Without question, Orson Welles is the one that has left the deepest impression. Partly, that's because we had an extraordinary partnership for 5.5 years. And also, it was the first real break that either of us had in the theater. And so one remembers it the way one remembers first loves, as a very special thing.
You entered the entertainment business, what, some half century ago. You came in with certain ideals, certain dreams, ambitions. How have those ambitions and dreams and ideals changed over the years?
Well, it's not strictly true that I had that ambitions and dreams. I came in because I went bankrupt in another business entirely, in the international grain business, and this was simply a way of earning a living in the beginning. And then I very soon found what I wanted to do and fell in love with that. The changes are absolutely monumental, but they're no greater than the changes in all the rest of our lives. The entertainment business has undergone total revolutions, the whole elimination of distance through and time through radio, the whole additions in television, and, of course, now the added inventions of the cassette and various forms of electronic miracles that are being performed. The theater has gone through, of course, much fewer mutations because it is limited by its very nature. But those are also its virtues. I mean, what the theater gives you, which is the direct communication of the author's words through living actors with a living audience and the reaction of that audience reacting back onto the stage, is something that only happens under special circumstances, which we know as the legitimate theater. And that has only changed in certain respects. The constants there are very evident, and they're quite wonderful.
Does the theater and the cinema and television reflect our current thinking at any given point, or do they shape it more than they reflect it?
It is my theory that they reflect it. I don't think the theater has ever shaped anything. The theater reflects the society in which it functions. With the mass media, this may differ slightly because of the incredible number of people who watch and the fact that they watch day in and day out, hour after hour, which was never true in the theater in the old days. And that undoubtedly permeates society. I still believe that the habits of society, such as violence, such as all the other things that the mass media are approached with, are in fact reflections, not creations of the mass media.
I was just reading a piece, and I believe it was Time magazine yesterday, about the colorization of black and white films and how Hollywood, so many of the greatest stars are against the idea.
I feel very strongly about it. I'm totally against the idea. There's nothing wrong. I mean, the process is perfectly sound because color is superimposed anyway. That's true of every television show you see. But I'm not even complaining about the quality, but where a film has been made with great care and a great deal of thought in a wonderful medium, which is black and white photography, which in many respects is more dramatic and superior to color photography, you have no right to disfigure and transmute that. And the reasons are bad. I know the reasons that the young won't look at anything that isn't in color. I'm not even sure that I believe that, although experiments, investigations probably tell you that story. But then they've simply got to get used to the fact that some of the great films that they love were made in black and white. I'm not suggesting that you have to make films today in black and white. Perhaps the objections are so strong that you can't. But the old films should be left alone the way they were made.
One quick last question, because I know that you have many other appointments today. Is there anything that you have not done that you are really yearning to do?
No. No, I don't think so. I ask myself that question. That doesn't mean that something won't come up one morning which I'll suddenly desperately want to do. But at this moment, I'm not yearning or grieving for not having done any particular thing.
You've had a very fulfilling life.
I've had a very exciting life.
I'm Bill Thompson, and now I've heard everything.